Hey, everybody. On this episode of The Charlie Kirk Show, good news out of the U.S. Senate. Finally, some good news. All things Andrew Cuomo, and we even pipe in his live conference throughout this program, so you'll hear a little bit of that. And then, do people want to be free? And also, we talk about a professor at Rutgers University, made possible by our Turning Point USA professor watchlist at professorwatchlist.org. If this program has impacted your life positively, go to charliekirk.com/support and support us if you can at charliekirk.com/support. Email us your questions, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. Action-packed episode. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
All right, listen closely, everybody. This is a very special offer from a dear friend of mine, someone who has been so generous, so amazing to Turning Point USA and to the Charlie Kirk Show, a friend of mine, Ed Zeman. So look, we talk a lot about Florida, the great state of Florida. And if you or a loved one are looking for an amazing getaway in the greatest state, which is Florida, my home state, look no further than a high-end RV resort, a total amazing experience at the Tides RV Resort, very close to the Tampa, St. Pete area. That's the TidesRVResort.com. So look, I visited it myself, actually. My buddy Ed texted me, said, you got to check it out. I want to partner with you guys on the Charlie Kirk Show. So I went a couple weeks ago. In fact, I did the Charlie Kirk Show right from the Tides RV Resort. That's how mission-driven they are. And I've never seen an RV resort before, so I wasn't really sure what to expect. I can tell you right now, five-star, luxury, the best out there. And so maybe you guys are in the RV business. And by the way, some of you might not be, but you should be. It's actually kind of cool. You can see the country. You can live nicely. But for those of you that are in the RV community, by the way, 500,000 RVs were sold last year. This is the place for you. I've been there. And again, it's amazing. It has everything you could want as a high-end RV owner, including two pools, a clubhouse, a 30-acre lake, a billiard room, a card room, an office, kayaking on the river, and plenty more things to do for an active lifestyle. So check it out. If you have an RV and you're planning a big trip, then you know you need an RV resort maybe to park. So go to thetidesrvresort.com or just call them directly at 941-244-5744. That's 941-244-5744. The Tides RV Resort is owned and operated, again, by my great friend, Ed Zeman. They're an outstanding family. They love our country, and they want to get behind our program. They've donated very generously to Turning Point USA. So when you maybe check it out or you go there, tell them Charlie Kirk sent you and receive a free gift. That's right, a free gift, and use the promo code Charlie when booking online. Whenever you are in the country, get in your RV or rent one. Experience the beautiful country and take advantage of this amazing getaway in the free open state of Florida. Don't let the lockdowns get in the way of you living your life. Check out the Tides RV Resort. Let me say that again. The Tides RV Resort. The website, thetidesrvresort.com. If you are in the RV world, check it out. Tell them Charlie Kirk sent you. They're amazing people. Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. Welcome today with heavy, busy news day, important news day. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com, and make sure you check out the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. There's so much happening here, and there's actually some really good news. There's a piece here about how Democrats are worrying the United States Senate will become a graveyard for the Biden agenda, which was the big reason for why we wanted Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue to win in Georgia so that we could stop the Biden agenda. So we're going to get into that. There's this professor at Rutgers University, Brittany Cooper. We're going to cover that. But I want to start with something that was emailed to us at freedom@charliekirk.com. One of our listeners by the name of Laura, I don't want to say her last name out of fear for her losing her career. Some of the most wise commentary that I see in American politics comes from our listeners. And we get thousands and thousands and thousands of emails a week, and I read them all. I don't respond to them all, but this was so well put by Laura. It was deeper, more sophisticated than almost everything I've seen on cable news about this topic. Here's what she said. Charlie, the Cuomo double scandal reminds me of the Northam double scandal. Cuomo killed thousands in nursing homes, but let's talk about harassment instead. Northam said it's okay to let babies die outside the womb, but let's talk about who's under the KKK hood. Results, the scandals do not multiply, they disperse. Northam is still governor of Virginia. This is a very counterintuitive strategy. Can you talk more about how it works? I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. Thanks. I want to reread this. There's so much wisdom here, and it's exactly right. The scandals don't multiply. They disperse. So in the news cycle that we are in, actually, the better way to say it is the way that we are doing news in America today, it is short bursts of information almost for an increasingly attention deficit population that really doesn't care about the depth, the nuance, the detail, or the evidence behind a story. Instead, the clickbaity headlines. You see, the story of the nursing homes is actually a very complicated story. The nursing home story is one that we warned about on this program and the great one Mark Levin warned about back in March. I remember listening to the Mark Levin radio program, and a woman called into the Great Ones radio show and said, Mark, I work for a nursing home association, and Andrew Cuomo is now ordering Chinese coronavirus-infected patients to be put into nursing homes. At the time, Andrew Cuomo was doing his multi-hour, slow daily briefings. Mark Levin asked the caller, this can't possibly be true, and Janice Dean, who works for Fox News, claims that both of her parents were killed as a result of this policy. So this was a scandal that we knew was occurring. Now, putting Chinese coronavirus-infected patients into nursing homes is bad enough. But Andrew Cuomo decided to do something worse than that. He doubled down on the policy, lied about it ever happening, and then covered it up. You see, early on in the virus, it's understandable that mistakes are going to be made. Some Republican governors made some mistakes. And you course correct. You say, we shouldn't have done that. And you adjust. That's what being a leader is all about. So do I think that Andrew Cuomo was a fool to sign off on this policy? Absolutely. But if it would have just been a mistake that he then corrected, it wouldn't be a scandal. The real scandal is how he doubled down on it, lied about it, and then covered it up. So Andrew Cuomo is under serious potential backlash and investigative threat. First and foremost, from Letitia James, the Attorney General of New York. Letitia James has launched an investigation. She issued a report. And basically, Andrew Cuomo did his best Hillary Clinton impersonation. And Andrew Cuomo said, what difference does it make? They're dead. So I want to focus in on this very important point that Laura emailed us about. Because the way that our media operates now, you would think that the more scandals, the more negative news, the worse for the principal or the worse of the subject that is going through it. When in reality, it turns to be the exact opposite. In reality, it looks as if you're able to almost fatigue the population by stringing out the scandal, distracting from the scandal, by having other more clickbaity style news items still about you that are still embarrassing pop up, and then the page can be metaphorically turned and people lose interest. You see, unfortunately, the way that many of these investigations work, unfortunately, the way that our system is functioning, if the people lose interest, and most importantly, and it's not a good thing, if the New York Times, the Washington Post loses interest, then the story basically disappears. So what is getting more press attention right now? The fact that Andrew Cuomo is a sexually deviant pig? Or the fact that Andrew Cuomo put infected patients in nursing homes, resulting in anywhere between tens of thousands of deaths, we don't know the number, an investigation would tell us that, lied about it, covered it up, then wrote a book about it, and won an Emmy, while calling the virus the European virus and endlessly lecturing other states. Now, Democrats right now are looking for a new strategy, and the only playbook that they know where this works is the Governor Ralph Northam scandal. Because usually the traditional playbook for Democrats is distracting from scandals by blaming Trump. So I was on Fox News yesterday with Leslie Marshall. And Leslie Marshall, instead of answering the questions about Andrew Cuomo being a pig, she says, well, Donald Trump did much worse stuff. Donald Trump is sipping Diet Cokes at Mar-a-Lago, poolside, after he got done golfing. It's irrelevant. So Trump is not around, so the Democrats now have to focus elsewhere. They have to fill the vacuum. So they can't necessarily blame Trump, but they'll still try to have a couple people on cable news say that as a way to try to create a smoke screen, if you will, cover fire. A sleight of hand is basically what goes on. But you must understand that there is a playbook on how to deal with Me Too. There is a playbook on how to survive accusations, either racial accusations or Me Too accusations. There is no playbook on how to survive infants being relaxed and possibly terminated, or nursing homes being the center of an entire political scandal. So what we're seeing here is a counterintuitive press strategy, one that Cuomo's actually a little bit happy about. He'd much rather be attacked for saying things to women than possibly killing thousands of elderly people. You see, the Democrats are going to the only playbook they know on how to protect and potentially bail out an embattled governor. You see, corrupt Democrat governors, it's not anything new. I grew up in Illinois, where we have term limits in Illinois. It's one term in office, one term in jail. I remember Governor Rod Blagojevich, who I actually was pleased to see pardoned just because he's so entertaining to see on television. And he had some very good things to say about Donald Trump. And I do believe he was over-prosecuted by the Obama machine. I really do. Rod Blagojevich was a very corrupt Democrat governor. You remember Elliot Spitzer? Elliot Spitzer was forced to resign as governor of the state of New York. Now, for those of you that are just getting involved in politics, you missed the joy of watching the Elliot Spitzer story unfold. It was one of the most entertaining, hard to believe political scandals in American history. So, Elliot Spitzer was a very popular governor of New York. And it came out that Elliot Spitzer, during a six-month span, had at least seven or eight liaisons with women from an agency and paid them more than $15,000. According to published reports, investigators allege that Spitzer paid up to $80,000 for prostitutes over a period of several years while he was attorney general and later as governor. Spitzer first drew attention of federal investigators when his bank reported suspicious money transfers under the anti-laundering provisions of the Bank Secrecy Act and the Patriot Act. Elliot Spitzer was forced to resign after that. Remember Anthony Weiner? Another New York politician that almost became mayor. You see, people forget this. Anthony Weiner had his scandal with Huma Abedin and Hillary Clinton, and then he had a attempted comeback where he was actually leading in the polls to become mayor of New York until it came out that he was not, let's just say, he not correcting his behavior. Let's put it that way. The issue of politicians under scandal is nothing new. But where the Democrats are nervous, and they should be, is that if a real investigation, especially from the media, was done into the nursing homes, into what happened in New York, Andrew Cuomo and the Cuomo political machine would be ruined. I want you to imagine if the New York Times did 1/10 the amount of reporting into the nursing home scandal of Andrew Cuomo that they did around Donald Trump's visits to Bedminster and Mar-a-Lago, which actually impacted the future of our republic, the livelihood of the citizens of our country. And so if you look up Andrew Cuomo online, you don't see anything to do with the nursing homes. Instead, it's all about the Me Too scandal, which I'm not saying it's not legitimate, but it's not overly shocking. And of course, the groups that all push the Me Too movement, Planned Parenthood, Women's March, National Abortion Rights, Action League, American Association, University of Women, National Latina Institute for Reproductive Justice, all silent on Governor Cuomo's allegations. But the playbook that Cuomo is now using is a sleight of hand that he learned from Governor Ralph Northam of Virginia, where you distract from the legitimate scandal that is in policy that has real implications, and you go to something that makes for good headlines for the tabloids. This is a pattern from the Democrats to distract away from policy, from the consequences of their ideas, and instead focus on either identity politics, mass movements, or issues that really don't have anything to do with the livelihood of the citizens that they are sworn to protect and serve. And so Andrew Cuomo, of course, comes from the Cuomo political family. His father, Mario Cuomo, very questionably corrupt man. Do you know that Andrew Cuomo ran the Department for Housing and Urban Development while his father was governor of New York? I wonder if there were any favorable housing contracts that were given New York or New York City when that arrangement was made. But that's literally before I was born that was happening. You see, the Democrat strategy is not just to deflect, but try and run out the clock on the attention span of the news media, and with it, the American populace. The thing that we as conservatives do not do a good job of is Saul Alinsky's rule, keep the pressure on. If you don't know who Saul Alinsky is, Saul Alinsky was a community organizer, wrote Rules for Radicals. It's basically the Bible of the left. It is the book that they follow. It is, I believe, 13 rules for radicals, some of which include find a tactic your people enjoy doing, find an effective tactic, accuse the enemy of what you yourself are actually doing, keep the pressure on, amongst many other rules. The left is very good at keeping the pressure on. I mean, how long did they focus on Trump's tax returns? That was a 5-year fight. Whereas we as conservatives, mainly because the conservative movement actually believes in Judeo-Christian values, we offer grace and we kind of move on. I'm not saying that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing at times. But let me tell you one thing we should not have forgot about. And of course, there are other issues that pop up. There are other issues that arise. But the Governor Ralph Northam scandal in Virginia never got settled. Remember when Governor Ralph Northam came out and said, you see, when a baby is born, we are going to relax that baby, and then we're going to give it to the mother, and a decision will be made on how to proceed. He, of course, is explaining in great detail infanticide, the murder of children. You might remember this tape, and regardless of her views on abortion, I am pro-life. This is child murder. Play tape.
So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother.
Delivered, made comfortable, and then a decision would be made whether or not to murder the child or keep the child alive. This was the number one news story in the country. That news story was one that the Democrats and the left were very scared about because the reality of abortion was then front and center of every single political discussion in America. So what ended up happening, and I'm not saying the Democrats wanted it this way, but it ended up working accidentally, was that Governor Ralph Northam and his racist past came center, front and center. Where we still have never received an answer of whether or not Ralph Northam was in the KKK hood or wearing blackface. We still don't know. One of those two. Still has not given an answer. The media lost interest. Ralph Northam decided to go above and beyond for the Black Lives Matter, BLM Incorporated riots over the summer, pandering to them. And Northam survived. And the media basically said, not a big deal. We'll just focus on Trump. They are trying the same playbook now for Andrew Cuomo. But instead of delivering a baby, relaxing the baby, and then ending the baby's life, it's the most vulnerable elderly among us that were put in harm's way with infected Chinese coronavirus patients, and then Cuomo lied about it. This should be one of the biggest political scandals in modern American history. We knew it was happening. We saw it happening. We have testimonials. There's data. There's evidence. Letitia James, who's a very ambitious attorney general in New York, is doing this, I believe, purely and solely for her own political future and political purposes. But at least she's doing it. She issued the report where it showed that Andrew Cuomo enacted this policy and then played games with the numbers on how it actually unfolded. Now, will Cuomo face a political consequence? Very unlikely. But when you type Cuomo into Google, almost every single story is about Andrew Cuomo with three accusations. Now, Andrew Cuomo is going to hold a press conference today. His Emmy Award-winning press conference. This is from the New York Post. Andrew Cuomo to hold first news conference, sexual harassment scandal broke. Even the New York Post is falling for it. I love you guys. So don't fall for it. The real scandal is not sexual harassment. That's not news. He's a 63-year-old ruling class member who runs the second largest state in the country. He has a reputation of being a pig and a deviant towards women. The real story is how he used his moral high ground, his absolute authority as governor, to infect and potentially kill thousands of his own citizens and then cover it up and then lie about it. There's a lot of energy in the Democrat base, especially from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, but more specifically in New York, kind of the AOC crew, to get rid of Andrew Cuomo. Cuomo and his multi-decade political machine is now in total and complete jeopardy. Chris Cuomo has admitted he's not going to cover this at all. Chris Cuomo went on television and said, of course I know it's happened with my brother. I can't talk about it. CNN has covered it extensively. First of all, CNN has not covered it extensively. That's just not true. And Andrew Cuomo was rewarded every single step of the way by mass media, by Hollywood, for his handling of the Chinese coronavirus. And here's a question that we brought up earlier. I don't know if we actually ordered his book or not. How did he get away with writing a book in the midst of a scandal? In the midst of a crisis? Could you imagine if Donald Trump published a book in the midst of the Chinese coronavirus? Andrew Cuomo, Cut 51, says, who cares people died in nursing homes or hospitals? The Hillary Clinton way of looking at it. What difference does it make? Play tape.
But we're below the national average in number of deaths in nursing homes. But who cares? 33, 28 died in a hospital, died in a nursing home. They died.
So why does that matter? That's actually a really important point. Since we do not have any form of an honest press in our country, a follow-up question would say, well, Mr. Cuomo, let me tell you why that matters. Because in densely populated nursing homes of people over the age of 80 with comorbidities, if you were putting infected patients into those environments, it matters a lot. Whereas in hospitals, they're far more equipped to handle people that are currently fighting upper respiratory illnesses or diseases than a nursing home. Wouldn't you agree with that, Mr. Cuomo? That's the point. The point is not some sort of clerical error. The point is, did Andrew Cuomo willingly put infected patients into a nursing home environment? And then why did he lie about it and celebrate his handling of it? So this is going to be a very interesting testing moment for the Democrats. The Democrats are in control of the House, the Senate, and the presidency. Republicans have the data to prove that their handling of the Chinese coronavirus was not a little bit better, but dramatically better than every single Democrat. The only Democrat in the country that I say handled it better than most is Jared Polis in Colorado. He didn't do well, but he opened up his businesses earlier. And he actually handled it better than Governor Sisolak in Nevada. But who has been under more pressure from the activist press? Ron DeSantis or Andrew Cuomo? It's not even close. Ron DeSantis came under more scrutiny for drinking a beer without a mask on during the Super Bowl than Andrew Cuomo did for putting infected Chinese coronavirus patients into nursing homes. Florida is the second oldest state in the country with a more densely urban population than New York. That's a fact. It is the third largest state. Yet California and New York per capita have higher deaths than Florida, also with their schools closed. Governor Kristi Noem, Ron DeSantis. Now Greg Abbott is fully opening his state. So Democrats have a lot of soul searching to do. They're going to have to decide this. Do we want Cuomo gone or not? They have the power. The French Revolution mob can remove Robespierre. They can use the guillotine that he created against him. Look, big tech has come after conservatives like we've never seen before. My entire CPAC speech, which many of you were very kind in praising, so thank you for that, was all about big tech. Now look, every device, whether you're on your phone, laptop, or television, has a unique string of numbers called an IP address. When you search for stuff online, watch videos, or even click a link, big tech companies can use that IP address to track all your activity and tie it back to you. When I use ExpressVPN, my connection gets rerouted through their secure encrypted servers, so these companies can never see my IP address at all. My internet activity becomes anonymized and my network data is encrypted. So protect your internet activity with the VPN I trust to use every single day. So visit expressvpn.com/charlie to get 3 extra months of a 1-year package. I love ExpressVPN. In fact, I'm using it right now. I just looked at my phone and I saw that beautiful 3 letters next to my Wi-Fi connection, VPN, with a square around it. Actually, it's more like a rectangle. It's a beautiful rectangle. If you don't have that beautiful rectangle, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, protect yourself against the big tech companies and foreign actors and bad people altogether. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. You know, I get a lot of emails and a lot of questions where people say, where did all these ideas come from? Why is it that our corporations are embracing critical race theory? Why is it that our politicians are saying that we must eradicate whiteness? How is it possible that Coca-Cola, a publicly traded company, sponsored Robin DiAngelo to come say that we must eradicate whiteness in our country? And being white, according to Coca-Cola, is being arrogant, divisive, and oppressive. The answer is that what happens on college campuses does not stay on college campuses. We talk about this all the time at Turning Point USA. That one of the greatest failures of conservatives over the last couple decades has been the education of our children and the lackluster involvement from conservatives and, yes, Christians in the building of institutions, specifically higher education. So since we've been talking so much about New York, I want to talk about the State University of New Jersey. You might say, what is the State University of New Jersey? It's called Rutgers University. It's actually the official name of the college. A lot of people don't know that. This woman is teaching your children. Now, this woman is a professor. She is given a mantle of credibility to publish articles, to write journals, to lecture, to teach potential teachers. This woman, Brittany Cooper, is teaching teachers. Brittany Cooper is an associate professor of Africana and Women's and Gender Studies at Rutgers University. Much of her research and writing centers around the intersections of race, feminism, and gender. Cooper's work has led to a couple of very bizarre opinions. Now, by the way, I am reading from professorwatchlist.org, which is a project of Turning Point USA, tpusa.com. And if you have questions about any professors that might be teaching your children from schools you went to, go to professorwatchlist.org. This is what Brittany Cooper is teaching her students, teaching potential teachers. She claims that American Christians worship a God of, quote, white supremacy and patriarchy. She chooses to worship Jesus, but says that he, quote, was a queer and, quote, married a prostitute. There's no evidence at all that Jesus ever married anyone. I think she's talking about Mary Magdalene. I'm guessing that's what she's talking about, right, Connor? She says that white families like Mitt Romney's can't properly raise black children. No, yeah. So this is a really interesting argument. We heard this from Ibram X. Kendi and some of these other fools that are educating your children and the students of America, where it's, hey, white people, stop adopting black kids. Oh, sorry if a white family wants to be helpful to Western civilization for trying to extend a hand. So she believes that is white colonialization. She says that the founding principle of our nation is that black people are inhuman. Therefore, riots are really just resistance against an unjust system. Of course, someone should tell Brittany Cooper that in the original draft of the U.S. Constitution, Thomas Jefferson argued against slavery. Someone should tell Brittany Cooper that Francis Scott Key, who wrote the national anthem, was not just an abolitionist, but an anti-slavery lawyer and activist. Someone should tell Brittany Cooper that John Quincy Adams, the sixth president of the United States and son of John Adams, was a fierce anti-slavery advocate whose father was a founding father. In fact, he was so committed to the anti-slavery cause after losing the presidency to Andrew Jackson, the seventh president, he entered Congress and served another 9 years just for the cause of trying to abolish slavery. Someone should tell Brittany Cooper about Thaddeus Stevens, Frederick Douglass, Booker T. Washington, George Washington Carver. She continues by saying, obesity in the black community is caused by racism. I'm not going to get into that one. But all I have to say is Brittany Cooper looks like Stacey Abrams.
Look, no one likes going to the post office. Going to the post office is probably not how you want to spend your time. That's why I recommend mailing and shipping online at Stamps.com. Stamps.com allows you to mail and ship anytime, anywhere, right from your computer. Send letters, ship packages, and pay a lot less with discounted rates from USPS, UPS, and more. Stamps.com has saved businesses thousands of hours and tons of money. With Stamps.com, you get the services of the post office and UPS all in one place, plus big discounts on mailing and shipping rates. Stamps.com brings the services of the U.S. Postal Service and UPS right to your computer. At Stamps.com, it's a must-have for any business. Whether you're a small office sending out invoices, an online seller shipping out orders, or even a giant warehouse sending thousands of packages a day, Stamps.com can handle it all with ease. Simply use your computer to print official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send. Once your mail is ready, just schedule a pickup or drop it off. It's really that simple. With Stamps.com, you get discounts up to 40% off post office rates and 62% off UPS shipping rates. So go to Stamps.com. It's a no-brainer. So stop wasting time going to the post office and go to Stamps.com instead. There is no risk with my promo code KIRK. You get a special offer that includes 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Kirk. That's stamps.com, promo code Kirk. Stamps.com, never go to the post office again.
I love when I read articles when I do my show prep in the morning that say that Democrats are worried and Democrats are upset about something. That makes a day worth living. Democrats worry Senate will be graveyard for Biden agenda. I'm reading from The Hill by Alexander Bolton. Liberal Democrats are growing more and more worried that the Senate will serve as a legislative graveyard for President Biden's agenda, unless he and other centrists rally behind doing away with the filibuster. The tensions, for now, are mostly under the surface as the party approaches an initial victory under Biden, passing into law this giant $1.9 trillion Chinese coronavirus relief bill. Tomorrow or on Friday, as soon as I get an opportunity to really go through it, I will do what we have done, I think, more clearly than any other program in the last year. Oppose any and all stimulus. Stimulus does not help the American economy. It is not targeted. Most of the money from the December stimulus is not even spent. It will result in inflation, increased debts, deficits, bailouts of broken states. We oppose the first stimulus, the second stimulus, and the stimulus. And by the way, all of the stimulus is on top of a $4 trillion federal budget. You want to stimulate the American economy? Open everything up. We never should have locked down. I get the first 2 weeks of lockdowns, maybe. By April 1st, the entire country should have been open. Act responsibly. Focus on therapeutics. Social distance. Stay at home if you need to. But do not restrict the liberties granted to us by God for a constantly moving target and objective. 15 days to slow the spread. You know, we're coming up on 2 years, on 1 year, are 15 days to slow the spread. Then it was 6 weeks to slow the spread. Shut down businesses, shut down churches, imprison pastors, mount unsustainable fines. Meanwhile, you allow BLM Incorporated to march through the streets. You want to stimulate the American economy? Open everything up. Deficit spending does not work. And it'd be one thing if they proposed an infrastructure package where we could touch and see and use some of the money spent. Still, it's probably a huge handout to unions. Some of those unions are very corrupt. Other unions are ones that are more of the muscular class. They've had a tough time the last couple of years, and they actually produce something of value, unlike the SEIU and AFSCME and a large portion of the American Federation of Teachers and the National Education Association that are ruining children's lives by not opening schools. This relief bill will relieve the next generation of their future. That's all it's going to do. This will not offer substantial relief to the people suffering in our country. There is a law of economics that is so obvious, you should not have to say it. Printing dollars does not create wealth. Creating money does not create goods or services. It only creates the number of dollars in circulation, therefore making those dollars worth less. Do you know only 9% of this bill actually goes to the Chinese coronavirus? There is unspent PPP money. There's unspent dollars from the first stimulus bill. So why are they doing this? Democrats are using a crisis as an opportunity. Never let a crisis go to waste. Housing crisis, healthcare crisis, auto crisis. This is why they're licking their chops for their real power grab. The Chinese coronavirus, they know people are going to get over this in the next 9 months. How are they really going to achieve the Great Reset? This is why the great Rush Limbaugh was at times overly fixated, but I actually think he wasn't, on the environmental movement. That issue is how they are going to achieve their Great Reset. However, back to the good news. The $1.9 trillion bill should not be passed. Any Republican that voted for it is doing a disservice to their constituents. It will do nothing to stimulate economic growth or middle-class incomes. Nothing. Or help the muscular class in our country. The Senate is expected to pass it this week, and when it becomes law, it will serve as an unmistakable victory in Biden's first 100 days. And nothing says unmistakable victory like ruining the country. Yet this initial victory will cover up fears among Democrats that big ticket items passed in the House will die in the Senate unless the party greases the gears for change by ending the filibuster. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is insisting the Senate won't be a graveyard. The term Mitch McConnell welcomed in describing what would happen to legislation passed by the Democrat House to the Senate if he controlled the Senate over the past 2 years. Schumer says, I believe, and I believe my caucus believes, that we need big, bold action, and we're going to figure out the best way to get big, bold action on a whole lot of fronts. But the White House on Tuesday wanted to avoid this, where Biden didn't take questions from Democrat senators on Tuesday during a brief 8-minute call to their weekly luncheon. Wait, so Biden doesn't take questions from senators? He doesn't take questions from the press? Does Biden take questions from anybody? You see, if I was a Democrat senator like the Snow Woman, Amy Klobuchar, and I worked really hard to get Joe Biden elected, and he's not even going to take questions? The call ended, serving as a pep rally. Well, congratulations, Joe Biden. You finally have put together a rally. Ahead of the vote this week on the relief measure. But by taking no questions, Biden also avoided from hearing from liberal senators about the filibuster or the push on the $15 minimum wage. This is not leadership by Joe Biden. The Democrat caucus, the Democrat Party is going to splinter soon. I'm reading between the lines for you guys here. I'm telling you what's happening. Schumer said, he said we need to pass this bill and pass it soon. He said the Senate, quote, will have the votes and we just need to pass the bill. And that Congress is on track to send the measure to Biden's desk for federal unemployment benefits that expire March 14th. However, the big issue is the filibuster. We have gone through this in great detail of what the filibuster is. And essentially, the filibuster is a procedural precedent that requires 50 votes to allow you to get 50 votes to pass certain legislation. I know that sounds weird, but to get rid of the filibuster, you have to vote to get rid of the filibuster. In order to do so, you need every Democrat to agree. So Senator Joe Manchin and Senator Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona say there is no chance they will remove the filibuster. So what does that mean? The piece continues by saying, Democrats expect pressure on lawmakers to repeal the filibuster to mount after the House passes H.R. 1, a sweeping campaign finance reform measure, and the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, both of which are expected to run into Senate filibusters. Good. Jen Psaki says that the White House is not going to get ahead of the process. The president's view of the filibuster is well known. Well, no, actually it isn't, Circleback Woman. He has not changed that point of view, but certainly any step to protect voting rights to ensure that it's easier and not harder for people to vote in the country. Do you see? H.R. 1 is about basically saying Democrats never should lose a national election again. That's what H.R. 1 is. It's not the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. It's not the We Are Going to Usher in Heaven on Earth Act. It's Democrats will perpetually be in power if you pass it. Now, the only thing that will get in the way of H.R. 1, the filibuster. And a wacky liberal senator from Arizona and a blue dog Democrat from West Virginia might be the guardians of our republic. This is good news. I'm going to tell you even more about this because this is not being reported in a lot of the press. We got to focus in on the process and less on the politics. We have Andy Biggs coming on exclusively on the Charlie Kirk Show podcast to talk about H.R. 1. And I know a lot of you on radio and on the live stream are very worried for good reason about what happened in the 2020 election. I know a lot of you are worried about the ballot process, signature verifications, all the shenanigans around that. And we just had an amazing interview with Phil Klein, former Attorney General of Kansas, runs the Amistad Project. We talk about $400 million coming in at the last minute that was unaccounted for, the changing of election laws. There's a lot there that we have to go through. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez came out and tweeted that she's very angry. You see, this is this article I'm reading from thehill.com. Democrats worry Senate will be graveyard for Biden agenda. And most one of the things that we're talking about here is, of course, the $15 minimum wage, which might as well be called the Black Unemployment Act. If you want to have
blacks and Hispanics be disenfranchised from getting an entry into the workforce, arbitrarily raise the minimum wage. This is what happens in Seattle and Portland and New York. A raising of the minimum wage only temporarily helps people that were already on their way to get promotions. It does not help middle-class workers. It does not help working families at all. Instead, if you had a payroll tax cut, that would help everyone up and down the socioeconomic ladder. So during Tuesday's conference call, Biden expressed strong support for raising the federal minimum wage, but he stopped short of endorsing scrapping the filibuster. Now, this is not going to pass in the Senate, the $15 minimum wage, because there's someone called a parliamentarian. So it's not a very heavily covered news story. But this person, the parliamentarian, ruled that raising the minimum wage couldn't be included under the special budgetary rules that Democrats are using to sidestep the filibuster in the Senate. That led some Democrats to call for overruling the parliamentarian, a step rejected by Biden and the Senate Democrat leaders. AOC tweeted, quote, "It is utterly embarrassing that pay people enough to live is a stance that's even up for debate. Override the parliamentarian and raise the wage. McDonald's workers in Denmark are paid $22 an hour plus 6 weeks paid vacation. $15 an hour is a deep compromise, a big one, considering the phase-in." Is that the role of government, AOC? What is the role of government? Where do rights come from? Is it the role of government to arbitrarily interject itself into wage disputes between employers and employees? And I think a reasonable position is that there should be some form of an agreed upon wage for workers. We already have that. States and municipalities have decided to increase black unemployment by raising the minimum wage. There's a direct correlation between the arbitrary raising of minimum wage and blacks being unemployed and minorities going on government programs. Thomas Sowell, Walter Williams, and Shelby Steele, who many of you are enjoying on our live stream, have written extensively about this. For AOC, she has a completely different philosophical worldview of what she thinks government should do. You see, to her, she believes the Danish model, which, by the way, has incredibly strict immigration policies and no national military, and actually a more free market environment, excluding tax policy when it comes to regulatory policy. I'll get to that either in the next segment or a different time. That Denmark and McDonald's workers are the blueprint for America. But what's the cost of that? The cost is in Copenhagen, a city I don't think AOC even knows exists. Maybe she does. Maybe she knows her Scandinavian capitals. Maybe she knows Stockholm and Oslo, Helsinki and Copenhagen. Maybe she could tell you the difference between the Scandinavian countries and the Baltic states, which actually Finland, I think, is more of a Finland could be either Scandinavian or Baltic, Estonian, Latvia, Lithuania, or Baltic state. The points are, if you would like a hamburger to cost $22, go ahead. Pay the worker making the hamburger $22. You see, for AOC and her six-figure salary, who cares? For the working class person, raising prices is a tax on working people. All right, Andrew Cuomo is trying to win another Emmy. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but let's just go in. I want to hear just a little bit of his tone. And then we'll go back to other news. Let's cut in live.
Touching the faces of people all over the state, young and old, whatever. And I wonder what you make of those pictures.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Marcia. Let me take both questions. First, you're right about the state budget. It is critically important. The state budget is going to turn the page to the rebuilding phase. We've been working very hard to get funding from Washington to fill the gap, and that has been going well. We have to see what we actually get. But we then have tremendous financial needs on top of that. People have to pay their rent, they need food, et cetera. You also have New York City, which is in a very precarious situation. It's teetering, to use a word. Crime is way up. Homelessness is way up. Many people have left New York City. Hamptons, Mid-Hudson Valley, other states. We have to get New York City functional again and safe again and viable again. And we have to do that quickly. We have a new mayor that's going to be selected basically in June, I guess. Something could happen in November, but basically in June. And that work has to start right away. So, yes, the budget is very important. Having said
Should
that,
you step aside, though, and let somebody else handle it?
Yeah. Having said that, I'm going to cooperate with the Attorney General's investigation and do the budget. Remember, we did a budget last year in the spring in the heat of COVID, where it was the most intense period of my life, of this government's life, of this state's life. And we did both, and we'll do both here. On the pictures, Marcia, I understand the opinion of and feelings of Ms. Ruhr. And you are right. You can find hundreds of pictures of me making the same gesture with hundreds of people, women, men, children, etc. You can go find hundreds of pictures of me kissing people, men, women. It is my usual and customary way of greeting. You know that because you've watched me for, let's just say, more years than we care to remember. By the way, it was my father's way of greeting people. You're the governor of the state. You want people to feel comfortable. You want to reach out to them. I do it. I kiss and hug legislators. I was at an event in Queens the other day. Hugged the pastors and the assembly members who were there. So that is my way to do that. However, what I also understand is it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter my intent. What it matters is if anybody was offended by it, and I could intend no offense, but if they were offended by it, then it was wrong. And if they were offended by it, I apologize. And if they were hurt by it, I apologize. And if they felt pain from it, I apologize. I apologize. I did not intend it. I didn't mean it that way. But if that's how they felt, that's all that matters, and I apologize. Next question, operator.
Governor, your next question comes from Dave.
Okay, well, that was a mess. So I think Andrew Cuomo just created more problems for himself. And look, I'm not going to in any way feel sorry for him because I think he's a liar and a self-serving machine Democrat politician. First of all, at least we no longer have to debate that New York City is a mess. Cuomo, crime is up, homelessness is up, people are jumping off buildings, they're going to the Hamptons, buildings are on fire, you can't walk through Central Park, my mom can't make ziti for me and Fredo. Like, it's really bad. At least we've come to the conclusion, there's no debate, that New York City has become Gotham City under Andrew Cuomo's governorship. Maybe he's trying to create another scandal to distract from it. That's number one. Number two, you see, my typical way of greeting is I just slobber all over. I find any person that has a pulse. And I learned this from my father. And I just...
I kiss them. Hundreds of and I think to myself, hundreds of photos. The heck are you doing? Like, are you opening up? You're opening up the floodgates here a little bit, man, more than I think you should. And then he goes in and he says, I was just with pastors. And we were slobbering all over. Isn't it the virus? I thought you're not supposed to get within 25 nautical miles of each other. So that doesn't seem to be a very good defense. And yes, I know that in Italian culture, they kiss and hug a lot. I'm just merely adding some factual levity to what I think Cuomo is trying to convince people that he just does such a wonderful job with everything. But there's a deeper point to this. Despite the fact that Cuomo now on the record has admitted that New York is a third world city, he can't stand de Blasio. They hate each other, and I'm there for all of it. I think de Blasio's term limited out, right? That's basically what's happening. Andrew Yang could become mayor or whatever. Okay. So, and de Blasio will go down as one of the worst mayors in American history, no doubt. And the fact that Cuomo just comes out of nowhere and then says, and then children, I'm like, hold on, little word of advice, stay away from that one, okay? Not that should be a no-fly zone for you, Mr. Cuomo. There's a deeper philosophical point here. Andrew Cuomo, in 2019, Andrew Cuomo created a guillotine. In 2019, Andrew Cuomo signed into law a bill which lowered the bar for proving harassment claims. The bill signed into law in 2019 says harassment, quote, needs not to be severe or pervasive to be considered unlawful. Any action that rises above, quote, petty slights and trivial inconveniences. All of that could be a basis for a claim. So you might be saying, well, Charlie, how is that a guillotine? The French Revolution was led in part by a man by the name of Robespierre. Robespierre was part of a group called the Jacobins, a grassroots movement mostly focused in Paris and other urban centers across the beautiful country of France, inciting rage and fervor, and some would say revenge-driven action against the French ruling class. Over 10,000 people were publicly executed in show trials using the guillotine. Almost the modern-day equivalent of Antifa. Jacobins are Antifa. Robespierre was a revolutionary inspired by a French philosopher by the name of Jean-Jacques Rousseau. Jean-Jacques Rousseau famously valued the primitive over the civilized, the infant over the adult, the chaotic over the orderly, the bloody over the peaceful. Jean-Jacques Rousseau was a French philosopher who laid the philosophical groundwork for the massive social action that resulted in the French Revolution. And eventually, after the French Revolution, Napoleon Bonaparte took over and conquered most of Europe. Robespierre, actually, 17,000 people are estimated to be killed by the guillotines. Robespierre, not dissimilar to Julius Caesar and other leaders that want power and enable those around him or her, grew out of favor with the Jacobins. So the Jacobins said, you're next, Robespierre. The man who created the whole show, the man who put on the idea of we will no longer allow Louis the 14th, 15th, 16th? Can never get the number right. To rule any longer. They want us to eat cake sarcastically, Marie Antoinette. The blood will roll in the streets. 16th. Thank you. One of my favorite French quotes is après nous le déluge, which means after us, the flood, which was famously said by, I think, Louis the 14th. And so Andrew Cuomo pandered to the Jacobins. He said, sure, I'll give you your guillotine with no trial and no due process. I'll give you the ability to metaphorically decapitate people for any reason. Remember, this entire thing that Andrew Cuomo was pandering to was because of Brett Kavanaugh. Brett Kavanaugh, Harvey Weinstein, Bill Cosby. So now Andrew Cuomo is going to suffer the fate of Robespierre. Do you know what happened to Robespierre? He was killed by the Jacobins, by the guillotine he built, he created, and he supported, and the crowd applauded for 15 minutes. If you think you can control the mob, you're a prideful fool. They will come for you next. And for Mr. Cuomo, who has played a dangerous game with the vengeful mob, is now experiencing their rage. I want to praise Governor Greg Abbott for announcing that he is going to fully open the state of Texas. He's been a little bit slow to the draw. He locked down too much back in the spring, but he is doing the right thing. Brenna has emailed us, and it's a great question. Charlie, Governor Abbott finally stepped up and had the courage to open Texas 100%. You're right. He also removed the mask mandate, and we can breathe again. I'm thinking he took notes from Ron DeSantis. You're right. So proud of his courage. However, many people are saying he made the wrong choice. How can this be? Why would people not want their freedom back? Love the show. Listen to you every day. Brenna from Little Elm, Texas. Brenna, you have asked the best question of the day. I'm going to send you a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine because you are pursuing truth. People don't want to be free. They want to be taken care of. Our natural sinful state is not one of liberty. There's a phenomenal quote at the law school in Harvard that says, the law is the wise restraints that keep men free. It's a little counterintuitive, isn't it? That the law, limitations, restraints, is actually what keeps you free. The prevailing viewpoint over the last couple decades is people want to be free. No, they don't. They want to be provided stuff and taken care of. They want to be beneficiaries of a welfare state. Any glimmer of people wanting to be free is because they either have responsibility, they understand what freedom is, or they have a worldview that mandates them to be active and productive, like the Christian worldview, whereas the secular worldview does not require you to be active and productive. Instead, it would require you to be complaining and stationary. Shelby Steele said on our live stream, you might have heard it, that the challenge today is not slavery. It is freedom. When God, through Moses, brought the Israelites out of Egypt into the wilderness, they were being fed. What did they start to do? They started to complain. And they said, take us back to Egypt. There was meat there. As soon as people have a taste of freedom, most want to go back. Freedom and liberty can be very dangerous. Thinking that other people might not be wearing masks? Yeah, that's right. You might have to make decisions to adjust to that. To think that people are not going to be locked down in their homes and then go to restaurants? Yes, you might have to make adjustments to that. By the way, do you notice that Greg Abbott did not say you must go to a restaurant next week? He says you can. The way that it's being portrayed, the fear-mongering around it is almost as if there was a mandate that every Texan must go into a public park and do an Andrew Cuomo impersonation and start slobbering over each other. You see, liberty means that you are in a vulnerable position, by definition. Liberty is a loaded gun. In the wrong hands, people will abuse it. Liberty requires ethics. It requires what knowledge of what it means to be a good person, to live a purposeful life, to have a telos, which is a Greek word for purpose, which is where we get the word telescope from. Out in the distance, where am I going? You see, for a directionless, meandering, confused generation who has no purpose, no telos, I can see why they're scared of liberty. They want to be given a government-mandated excuse to sit and do nothing, because at the very least, they don't have to make difficult choices. So to answer your phenomenal question, Brenna, freedom is a value. It's not in the bloodstream. It's not in our DNA. It's not in the national human condition. If you don't teach people the need to fight for freedom or what freedom actually is and why you should live a free and full life of liberty, it will disappear. Phenomenal question. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com and support us at charliekirk.com/support. God bless. Speak to you soon.